Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. No advertisers on this episode. It's all thanks to you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. It's my exclusive conversation with Dennis Prager. I want to thank Stephanie from Michigan for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Andre from California, Stephen from Pennsylvania, Grace from California, William from Illinois, Chris from California, Allie from Kentucky for your generous support. Thank you. Mike from Arizona, Molly from Illinois, Michaela from Texas, Kathleen from Florida, Donna from Alabama, Diane from Alabama, Alicia from Arizona, Doris from California, Vanessa from Texas, Susan from California, Royce from Texas, William from Alabama, Jovita from California, Lori from Montana, and Charlene from Colorado. I can name so many more people. All of them have stepped up to support us monthly at charliekirk.com/support. I encourage you to do the same. It helps us out a lot, and we are deeply thankful if you do that. My conversation with Dennis Prager about Leviticus, the Old Testament, the founding of America, and more. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Thank you. So I don't want to take too much time because we have a very special guest tonight that we're going to learn a lot from. But I do want to give you a little bit of a summary of the last 24 hours and kind of everything that we experienced and everything that we were kind of going through at Turning Point USA. And so many of you know the work that we do at Turning Point USA is we do work on college campuses, so you don't have to. And our goal is to make sure that your grandkids live in a free country and to make sure that the ideas of freedom and liberty are passed down from one generation to the other. And we do this at Turning Point USA in proven and effective ways. In fact, we now have more high school chapters than college chapters at Turning Point USA. We have hundreds of thousands of students involved, some of whom are here tonight. And one of the things we do at Turning Point USA, and we believe firmly in our core, is that we should intentionally go to places where we are in the philosophical, religious, and ideological minority. That we need to go to places where we are not always going to get the warmest welcome. And in fact, I think one of the reasons that we have lost our country is that far too often conservatives are afraid to go into the left-wing bastions and speak the truth. And so we had this campus event scheduled at University of California, Davis, for quite some time. And What happened last night was something I've never experienced in my now 10 years of doing this. I have given over 120 speeches on campus. I've given over thousands and thousands of lectures. And as many of you know, radio and podcasting, I've never seen what has happened and what has unfolded. Because it wasn't just the students or the Antifa terrorists. What unfolded in the last 24 hours is so telling about how the elites and how leaders are involving themselves in the incitement of violence against conservatives. And I'll prove this to you and I'll show it to you. It's disturbing in more ways than one. So yesterday morning, we were hosting our radio program and they were already talking a big game at University of California, Davis. And the Sacramento Bee, which is the local newspaper in the Sacramento area, published a newspaper article calling me a fascist speaker. And that's not true, but you know, I can roll my eyes and say whatever, but the byline of the article took my breath away. It said, Charlie Kirk is coming to University of California, Davis, who has openly called for the lynching of trans people. Not only have I never said that, I haven't even remotely ever gotten close. It is a fabricated, total, completely fake lie. But the Sacramento Bee ran with it. And so immediately we mentioned it on our program. We emailed the head of the Sacramento Bee. We said, hey, this is an internet rumor of somebody that's a trans activist that came after Charlie because he didn't like his strong opinion when he said, quote, In the 1950s and 1960s, men would not have allowed men to compete against women in women's sports or go into women's locker rooms. They would have dealt with it. That was the exact quote. I never said lynching. I never thought of it. And what I meant by dealt with it is that the local district attorney would have arrested a man for going into the locker room for exposing himself to other women. I was very clear about that. And I said repeatedly, peaceful, 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 peaceful. I went out of my way to say that on the program. So the Sacramento Bee writes this, but it didn't stop there. And I'm going to show you this video in a second. The chancellor of the University of California, Davis, whole system of schools who earns $850,000 a year, made a video where he then told the entire student body that Charlie Kirk is coming to campus and he has openly called for violence against transgender people. Now, you know, our amazing security team was fielding death threats towards me and my family all week before this. And so what happened was a planned, orchestrated campaign on complete lies, trying to gin up the activist fervor and the energy. And praise God, nobody died last night. See, and that's not an exaggeration, okay? Praise God, nobody was seriously hospitalized, okay? A police officer was injured and assaulted. They tried to gain access into the building by breaking glass, by using quasi-military type tactics, graffiti, spray painting, hurling projectiles, death threats in the face, harassment. You're going to see that videos in a second. But it was so telling to me that people that are tasked with a fiduciary responsibility to run a school, they are committed to lying to the population and says, you got to ask yourself why. It's almost as if they wanted a riot so big that they had to cancel my appearance at University of California, Davis. And I'll tell you why. I got this from Dennis Prager, which is they get 4 years of uninterrupted indoctrination of students at UC Davis. They're terrified that Charlie Kirk would get 70 minutes. The university professor said it would be a big statement if Charlie spoke to an empty room. 900 students showed up to our event last evening at University of California, Davis. So I'm going to show this short video, and then I'll add some comments, and then I'm going to kind of show some lessons. And I'm going to give you three reasons why we do this at Turning Point USA, and then I'm going to stop the whole woe is me thing, because it's not about me, it's about you. Because if they can do this to me, they will do this to you. They will lie about you, they will smear you and slander you. And I'm going to tell you how we're going to deal with it. You're going to see first the chancellor, who earns $850,000 a year, say a material falsehood and a lie and repeat it to try to stoke incitement of a mob against a speaker he doesn't like. And then you'll see the activity of violence that happening. And praise God, no one was killed. Watch these videos.
Many of you have reached out to me and others regarding tonight's event organized by the registered student organization Turning Point USA, or TPUSA, at UC Davis. Thank you for sharing your distress at a student group hosting a speaker who is a well-documented proponent of misinformation and hate, and who has advocated for violence against transgender individuals. Under UC policy, campuses may not prohibit student organizations such as TPUSA from inviting these speakers, even if the speaker's intended speech is loathsome and hurtful to me and to others in our campus community. With respect to concerns related to violence, UC policy permits denial of requests if the speaker will present a clear and present danger to the campus. Our council also notes that there is a similarly heavy burden for criminal prosecution for incitement of violence. Please be assured that we are monitoring the event closely to determine if a threat or incitement develops that meets that threshold. We can't control how these groups operate, but we can work together to neutralize and negate their influence. So having to speak to an empty room would make a powerful statement.
Footage goes on for a while, and praise God the police did their job, because that really could have got out of control. But let me summarize a couple lessons, and a police officer did have to have medical care treated. A couple lessons from this that I think are important, because some people said, well, Charlie, why do you do this? Well, number one, we do this to encourage the conservative students that we have on campus there that they are not alone and that you have to stand for your beliefs regardless of what they try to do to you. That's number one. Number two, we do this to try to teach people something. We try to teach them that there is another worldview out there. In fact, at the event every event we do at Turning Point USA, if you disagree, you're allowed to go to the front of the line. You're allowed to ask any question of your choosing. And we did that last evening. The university president would never mention that. But the third reason we do this, which is the most important reason, because I got a couple emails today from people saying, Charlie, you're the one stoking the violence by attending. Don't you know better? And I think that's so incorrect. Because we do this, most importantly, to remind the radical left that they don't run this country. Because they're threatened by a short lecture where people who disagree can speak, but we need to go through the effort. So what is the lesson for all of you? Well, you got to defend yourself. You do. And we did defend ourselves. And believe it or not, the Sacramento Bee issued an apology and a retraction after all the violence, of course. And don't worry, we're drafting up a pretty spicy lawsuit, and they're very, very nervous at the Sacramento Bee. Very nervous. And I don't take a lot of joy in that. I don't want to get in the courts. But when they materially say something that I have never even thought, let alone is against everything I believe, it's not even a matter of something that's a lie. It is against my values is what they said I believe. Then I'm not going to put up with that. And there needs to be a price for it. But I want to also say this for all of you, which is they are now running for the hills, doing retractions and apologies, and they've been silent. And it's a reminder for all of you that the truth wins. And that is the cornerstone of Christianity, everybody, is that the truth will set you free. They have to lie. That university chancellor could have said, look, I don't like Charlie Kirk, but guys, don't do violence on our campus. And let me tell you, there's actually an internet rumor circulating that's not true. And let's not be, you know, nasty. Instead, he's inciting it because there's a brokenness. There's a darkness there. We have to be salt and light to these people. But for all of you that are experiencing some form of your own individual torment, I want you to know that the reason we do these events is to remind you you're not alone, to show you that there's many people that share your values. That's why we do what we do at Turning Point USA. And it's also to show that we can beat these people, that these people are beatable when we embrace the truth and we go to places where we're not always comfortable. That's where we make the biggest impact. And I can't think of a better segue to introduce someone who has taught me so much. I encourage everyone out here, whether you are religious or not religious, you need to take this man's Bible commentary seriously. I'm telling you, as a Bible-believing Christian who believes in the inerrancy of Scripture, listening and walking through his Genesis commentary significantly enriched my faith in Jesus Christ, in God, in the Scriptures, understanding the history and the inerrancy of the Word of God, and not to mention the necessity of believing in God. This man that you're about to hear from tonight has spoken with more human beings than any other person on the planet, on radio and otherwise. 40 years on radio, thousands of columns. He speaks fluent biblical Hebrew as well as six other languages. There's not a question you can ask him about the Torah that he will not be able to answer with whimsy and joy and be able to understand the specifics. And there will be a chance. Remember, I told you about this in the Q&A for you to ask the hardest question about religion or the Old Testament you can cook up. But Dennis Prager, more than anything else, the reason why I admire him and I learn so much from him is he fights evil. Is he doesn't just talk about it, he fights evil every day. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming the legendary Dennis Prager.
After that, I can only disappoint you. When I watched that college president, it reaffirmed a very dark view I have of college presidents. I believe, I've said this a number of times on my radio show, one qualification for college president in 95% of our colleges is that you be a coward. Cowardice is a qualification for presidency of a university or any of its deans. By the way, this was true. I was at Columbia University in the 1970s, a little after the Civil War. And I saw it then. Everything that we're seeing today was born then. And there were kids who took over the president's offices, took them over, took over dean's offices. Nothing was done to them. And then it was in the name of anti-war. Today it's anti-racism. Then it was anti-war. By the way, they really didn't care about the war. They cared about being drafted. Just it's important to note that. Because the moment the draft stopped, all the demonstrations stopped. So what Pol Pot did in Cambodia, which is unknown and unspoken of, the Hitlerite massacres of a third of the Cambodian people by the communists that took over, didn't have one demonstration on one campus in the United States of America. Because it didn't matter. They cared about Vietnamese like I care about some extraterrestrial group. So it's a disgrace. He lied. I mean, the man, he lied.
He materially lied.
Yes.
And again, I find no joy in this, but we're probably going to sue him and sue him for a lot of money because he caused a lot of damage for what he did.
That's right. So I'm all yours.
So Charlie. Welcome, Dennis. Dennis.
By the way, give this man applause. This man, we should all say a prayer to God of thanksgiving that Charlie never went to college. It's only a question that the Lord himself can answer. Would Charlie be the same Charlie had he been poisoned for 4 years? I don't know the answer. I suspect not, but you never know. You know, I did an hour on my radio show yesterday. Tell me if your kid came back from college a finer human being. Did anyone ever encounter that? You know, my kid went to, and then you named the school, and as a result of college, he or she is deeper, wiser, kinder, more respectful to us, his or her parents. Has anyone ever said that? Hillsdale. Does any? Yeah. Okay. Fine. Hillsdale. That's very possible. That's correct. Yes. Okay.
So, Dennis, there's so many important things we could talk about, but I do want to focus on your remarkable work on the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the books of Moses, the Torah, which I think you understand better than almost any living person on the planet today and how it applies to today's time, which is honestly the most important. But one of the things you talk about that I think can frame this discussion is something I have repeated, is the first 11 books of Genesis in particular lay out distinctions. You were talking about this earlier, which is God created a world where distinctions matter. And since the 1970s, the left has done everything they can to destroy distinctions. Talk about what distinctions God set up in creation and why does it matter?
I wrote this first in the 1980s, so this is not new, and I knew then how dangerous the left was. The left is the anti-Bible. That's what they are. It is the antithesis of the Bible. And I'd like to share with you, I know you've heard me and you've read me on this, I'm very flattered. What did God do after creating the world? What did God do the other 6 days? And whether you take day literally or not is of no interest to me. I happen to think it means era, because yom in Hebrew means era, just as it does in English. If you say in our day, you don't mean today. But it doesn't matter. If you take it literally, I don't have a problem with you. But what did God do the other 6 days? What did he do? And the answer is, God made order. The left makes disorder. To understand the left, you must understand it is a force for chaos. Because it's very hard to understand the left. If you say, you're a Christian, I'm a Jew, so tell me, where do I go to know what you believe? I'd say, yeah, read the Bible. Very simple. Okay? What would you say? What would a leftist say?
The New York Times.
Okay. By the way, that may well be an honest answer. That is correct. But they don't know where to send you, because it's not written. It's felt. Leftism is felt. And the feeling emanates from undoing divine order. Order reflects God. That's the point. So I listed in the 1980s these differences that God creates. Man and God, man and animal, man and woman, good and evil, holy and profane. Those are the five big...
Man and nature. Too, yeah.
Oh, yes, thank you. That's correct. Well, you know, Charlie knows my work a little better than I do. It is a combination of embarrassing and comforting. I alternate between both reactions. That's correct. Man and nature. Thank you. That's a big one today, because they are worshiping nature. So that is why I say the most important verse, in my opinion, everyone has their own choice, in the Bible is Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. If you don't accept that, it's not really worth going to Genesis 1:2. What's the second most important verse? Genesis 1:2. And it was all tohu vavohu, which is untranslatable. It's said null and void. It really means chaos. If you don't accept 1:1, you will accept 1:2. That is the left. The left is 1:2. You, Christian, me, Jew, we're 1:1. They're 1:2. It took me a lifetime to figure this out, because it's very complex. How does somebody really say men give birth? How do you get to the point where people say what is not just a lie, but it's an absurdity? It's as true as 2 and 2 is 6 that men give birth. It means that they live the chaos of Genesis 1:2. And it is done by obliterating distinctions. By the way, one other point, which I know Charlie knows, I'm thrilled. And that is the biblical Hebrew word for holy, kadosh, means separate. Holy is distinct. Holy and distinctiveness are synonymous.
And Dennis, part of what we're living through is the destruction of distinctions. And explain, give some details for that, because every one of the six, and there also is the distinction between life and death, if you wanted to add a seventh. But
well, and if I were to add an eighth, between beautiful and ugly.
Yes, that's right.
No, it's very important. That is a very important distinction. God cares about beauty. Look at all the details about building the tabernacle, the details about the priest's clothing, though there's a very great emphasis on beauty. That is why I've always defended, when I was at college, kids would get up and say, oh, the Catholic Church spends all this money, these impoverished people in South America, and they spend all this money on cathedrals. And I thought, what a stupid argument. Let's say you melted all the gold in any cathedral. How much would it help the poor people in any given city in Latin America or wherever else it might be? And then guess what? They don't have a cathedral. The one thing that gave them uplift and inspiration is now done with because the nihilists of the left have destroyed it in the name of giving people some money, which would be spent in such a tiny amount of time. Anyway, beauty, there is a war against every one of the distinctions. So since you asked me, I'll be very brief. So what does the serpent say in the Garden of Eden story? Eat from the tree of knowledge, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And what it really means is determining good and evil. That is what the left does. The left determines good and evil, not God. That is why they hate God as a belief, because God is the determiner of good and evil. That's why they hate us religious people. We are their biggest enemy, and Christians in particular, because it's so much more numerous. I, as a Jew, constantly say the most persecuted religious group in the world today are Christians, with the exception of one Muslim group in China, which is a terrible, terrible thing, but that's one confined place. But in Africa, massacres of Christians take place by Muslim fanatics regularly, and the hatred of Christians in the United States is completely understandable, because you are the only organized opposition. There are individual opponents of the left, but organized is only Christians, and not enough Christians, by the way, just to say the least. The Anglican Church in England has just announced that it wants to refer to God in non-binary terms. The Anglican Church, it's the Church of England, no more he. I have a very big essay in my Genesis.
Yeah, you have three options, he, she, or it.
That's like, right. So that, I don't know what they'll do. They'll just keep saying, I guess, God, or maybe they'll say Z. I'm not, you're not laughing because you're not familiar. You're not up to date on your wokeism. I'll bet you, I wonder if even Charlie knows this. Last week in the Washington Post, it had an article on a non-binary person and used the term Zer and Z, Z-E and Z-E-R, not in quotes. It is now part of Washington Post language, non-binary pronouns. That this is a sea change.
And that's not insignificant, because language needs to represent truth.
Yeah.
Language needs to represent something that we can all agree upon and communicate. And that is one way to get rid of distinctions, isn't it? You get rid of distinctions by having confusion of language.
Well, that's it. So the war against distinction. So, by the way, the male-female one is the most dramatic, perhaps. But it is not new. When I was in college, I was taught men and women are basically the same. The war against male-female distinctions is now generations long. I heard that men and women are basically the same. And I didn't put two and two together realizing how significant it was, but I knew it was nonsense. And it's when I came up with the idea that my grandmother, who never went to high school, understood life better than most PhDs do. And she knew that men and women were basically different. You have to go to college not to know that men and women are basically different. And by the way, one of the reasons that I oppose same-sex marriage, and I testified in Congress against it, and by the way, I say this, I just want you to know, my wife and I are godparents to a gay couple's children. In private life, these people are dear, dear souls in my life, and I want to make that clear. But that doesn't mean we redefine marriage for the first time in history. I have a motto which I think is worth adopting, everyone should adopt. compassion in the micro, standards in the macro. That's a very important distinction to keep. Anyway, I knew there was something very wrong because of the key argument that was made. And the key argument that was made for same-sex marriage is gender doesn't matter. Love does. Gender doesn't matter. And I realized, uh-oh, that is a very, very downhill slope for society. Gender doesn't matter? Okay, that is the end of humanity as we know it if gender doesn't matter, and that is what is now happening. Do you know how many young people now in high school, for example, and increasingly elementary school, say that they are the opposite sex? This is the first time in human history that we have this development. It is all socially induced. It is not natural to people. It is not natural for a high school girl to say, I'm really a boy. By the way, how does she know she's a boy? Seriously, think about it for a moment, how absurd it is. You don't know what the hell it is to be a boy. You don't have a clue. We have different brains. Forget we have different genitals. We have different brains. There's a male brain and a female brain. You don't know what it is like, for example, not to find anything. It is a uniquely male characteristic. If a transgendered male, that is woman becomes a male, starts not finding anything, I will start taking this much more seriously. Or my favorite male-female difference. They put, I know you've heard this too, but they some college had a test. They put some college boys and then college girls alone, one at a time, in a room for hours. They could just stare out and think. That's all they could do. So they asked the males, what did you think about? And they asked the females individually, what did you think about? So the males, to no one's shock, thought about sex and sports. What was revelatory to me was the female answer. It was revelatory. They reviewed conversations. Just for the record, there isn't a man alive who has ever reviewed a conversation. That's why I always tell wives, when you ask your husband, what are you thinking? And he says, nothing really. He is not lying to you.
Now, Dennis, a good segue is distinctions will cease to exist in society if good people don't fight to preserve them.
Well, that is exactly right. Look, you fight and I fight. I have another motto or meme. There are three types of good people. Those who fight, those who do nothing, and those who help the fighters. Helping the fighters is as important as fighting.
That's right.
If you help TPUSA or PragerU or any of the fighters, you are doing as much good as the fighters. Not everyone is either in a position or has the temperament to be a fighter. He does, and I do. And I recognize not everybody has that. But everybody can help fighters. And let me tell you something. If the fighters don't get supplies, they lose. So it's as important for you to help the fighters. You can't do nothing. But yes, America's in the fight of its life. This is, it's very sad. You know, I wrote a column every week, and I hope you'd look this up there, because there are 1,000 of them on the internet. And they're really not dated because I write about big themes. And I've written about this on many occasions, on the need to fight and how America is in the fight of its life. And we have never had a fight like this. This is a unique period in American history. I said to Charlie on the way here, I said, I don't know who it's worse for. Those of us old enough to remember America when Superman was Superman, when, you know, what is it? Truth, justice, and the American way.
Not anymore.
That was his motto. You know, Superman is no longer an American.
He's a member of the world.
Yes, Superman.
Citizen of the world.
A few years ago, in the comic strip, he stood in front of the United Nations and renounced his American citizenship. This is, by the way, is a great example of the difference between liberal and left. Liberals started Superman. Liberals in the 1930s and 40s and 50s loved America. The left hates America for good reason. The American ideal is the opposite of leftism. And he said, I am no longer an American. I am a citizen of the world. So I asked this question, who has it worse? Those of us who have seen the decline, or young people who never saw America at its best? I don't know the answer. I don't know if there is an answer. But my heart breaks for both groups. But I was going to tell you of a column I wrote a few weeks ago. So I founded a synagogue in Los Angeles. And I teach the Bible there every Saturday. And it's a very great source of my strength. We could talk about the Sabbath and if you like, Charlie. And we say a prayer for America every week. We have for decades. And one of the lines is, oh God, bless the United States of America, a beacon of light and freedom in the world. And it was maybe the hardest column I ever wrote that I have suggested to the board of my synagogue that we change the wording. It is no longer a beacon of light and liberty in the world. In fact, America is the greatest exporter of toxic ideas on earth today. The British Medical Journal did something I have never seen this past week. It attacked doctors. The British Medical Journal attacked American doctors for giving children hormone blockers. The American medical profession is a disgrace. The American educational profession is a disgrace. The American teachers are a disgrace. Not every teacher, not every doctor, obviously. As a profession, it's a disgrace. We are sending abroad, this is the country that was the beacon of light and democracy. So I have said, let us just all through the words, may it continue to be a beacon of light and democracy. But I can't lie in a prayer. I can't claim what is no longer true. And you could cry when you read that column.
So Dennis, a couple thoughts here before we open it up for some questions that I think is really important, especially when it comes to today's time. So we talk about distinctions, we talk about order. Can you just speak a little bit about America's founding roots and how the American founders knew the Torah? And in fact, how Deuteronomy was the most quoted of any book, secular or religious, in the writing of the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Declaration of Independence. We teach our kids in government schools that America was a secular nation, but in reality, it was the Bible that founded the philosophical tradition of the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world.
Yep. By the way, let me just address a word to those of you who are Christian, which is, I'm sure, most of you. I'll say it's a little confrontational, but only said with love, as you probably know. I have a love affair with America's Christians. And by the way, it's reciprocated. I feel very loved by America's Christians. But you're not a serious Christian if you don't know the first five books. That's everything rests on the first five books, the Torah. Jesus would agree with me. Love your neighbor as yourself is in the Torah. That's where it is. Love the stranger is in the Torah. Love God is in the Torah. The Ten Commandments are in the Torah. The Exodus is in the Torah. The creation is in the Torah. The Garden of Eden is in the Torah. The Torah, the first five books. You have to know that to know what it means to be a Jew or a Christian. So that's why I've been writing. I've written three of the five books. I'm working on Numbers. I didn't go in order. To my amazement, when I did Deuteronomy, which I bet you one out of 50 college students could identify what Deuteronomy is. And I noted on my show, by the way, do you know what virtually every American home had 100 years ago and 150 years ago? If they could afford it, they had a Bible and a piano. How many homes have Bibles and pianos today? Very, very few. Well, there you go. All 35 of you that clapped. Let's put it this way. God wants us to love beauty, and art needs God. It's a great combination, the Bible and the piano. So you need to know Deuteronomy. Yes, he's heard me note. I did not know this. The founders quoted Deuteronomy more than any other biblical book and any other secular book. The second most quoted author was Montesquieu. And by the way, you'll find this of interest. Jesus cites Psalms the most and second most Deuteronomy. The founders knew the Bible, the Torah in particular, so well that Jefferson and Franklin suggested that the Great Seal of the United States depict the Jews leaving Egypt. And these two were the least religious in the sense of being, they were not doctrinally Christian. They were God-centered, even Jefferson. But it just shows you how much the Torah meant to the founders of this country. So it is very important to know those books.
So the final thing, Dennis, and then we'll do some questions. One thing I think you deserve repeated credit for was your moral clarity when it really mattered. And you're sitting right here, Dennis, on a stage where this church was tested and a relationship and a friendship was formed that has now impacted millions of people and this local area. I'll tell you, Dennis, the story and for some other people, but it's directly connected with what you called in the spring of 2020. So Dennis, in the spring of 2020, for those that do not know, had the moral clarity and courage to write a column and go on his radio program and say that the lockdowns were the worst mistake in human history. Am I saying that correctly, Dennis? Worst mistake. And I'm going to let you talk about mistake versus tragedy, and because some people don't understand.
Versus evil.
Yeah, that's right. But as you know, far too many churches shut down and were not willing to do the right thing. Well, Dennis, I got to know the amazing pastors here at Dream City Church, and we had an opportunity to host President Trump in the summer of 2020. I think some of you were at that event. And every other place canceled us. They didn't want us. Dream City Church, under a lot of threats and a lot of pressure, a lot of public health stuff, they stood by us and we had that event. And it was a major turning point in the local area. And it was just amazing. And so, Dennis, you should feel comfortable speaking freely about the churches that didn't do the right thing, because this church did do the right thing and they were bold and courageous. But Dennis, talk about how disappointed you were in so many pastors and churches that rolled over and did not fight for liberty with the lockdowns.
It's very simple. The only hope for America lies in its religious community, religious Jews and Christians. If they fail, it's over. Because there's no guarantees this country will continue. What did Franklin say? It's a republic if you can keep it. Maybe we can't keep it. So this was a test. And by the way, you must include synagogues. Synagogues and churches, by and large, failed. They were obedient not only to secular authority, but to irrational secular authority. I mean, of course, you're obedient to rational secular authority. I would hope religious people stop at red lights. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I'm not for anarchy. The damage done to the society with a lockdown, with the lockdowns, what was done by shutting schools, children are not recovered yet from what happened. The economy was hurt horribly. The bank issue is only one manifestation. People got used to being given money for not working, which is exactly morally like giving people heroin. Free money is as addictive as free drugs. I think it is harder for most humans to get off benefits than it is to get off heroin. I mean that literally. There are riots in France because they're raising Macron, a leftist, wants to raise the Social Security age there to 64. There are riots. Front page of today's newspapers. They're rioting over it. And they get people over 62, I can't believe, they get 6,000 euros a month for doing nothing. The article opens of a couple that this year will be visiting Greece and other places. They're just living the life of the wealthy because of the free money that they're given. But there's nobody to support them. When it started, socialist governments in Europe, it was four young people working to support every one older person. Today, it's 1.5 people supporting every one. Soon it will be one supporting one. You can't have that. It doesn't work. 4-to-1 can work. And by the way, you know why people are having fewer children? Because of secularism, the great killer of society. Religious people have children. Secular people are worried about carbon emissions. And so why would I have a child? Because my child will expel carbon dioxide. I'm ruining the planet if I have a child. You got to go to college to come up with something that stupid. So, thank you. So, I read and read and read. Everything about the lockdowns struck me as just damaging. What it will increase poverty on earth, increase starvation on earth, all of which it did. And I had a test case. Thank God I never thought I would live to say this. God bless Sweden. I never thought I would say that in my life. Nobody there even believes in God. And I'm saying, God bless Sweden. Any Swedes here? You're all pointing to one person. Okay. There is one Swede in the audience. Tuck. Tuck. Sweden was the test case. They didn't close down. They didn't shut schools for one day for kids under 16. Not one day. By the way, guess what? The first college in America to shut down was Harvard. Isn't that fitting? The Ivy League is pathetic. Pathetic. Morally and intellectually and scientifically and every other way. So I wrote in April of 2020, this was the greatest mistake in history, and I made it clear, not the greatest evil, obviously not. I mean, what Mao did to the Chinese and Hitler did to the Jews, I mean, obviously those are evils. But this was the greatest international mistake. And of course, I was laughed at and mocked and et cetera, which only enables me to sleep even better. It does. By the way, just a word on that, because he has the same thing, and I hope I hope it registers with Charlie. If you want to touch the world, there is something much worse than being attacked. It's being ignored. And I know that. So the more they attack me, the more I realize, what is the old saying? When you fly over the target, there's more flak. That's correct. That flew over the target. Right now, I want you to know, it's a competition in my mind for the most dishonest profession. You have no idea what a competition this is. Is it college presidents and deans? Is it teachers' unions? Is it the American Medical Association? And I just don't know which it'll be. But I have to say this. If I know you have a degree in public health, I assume you're stupid.
Is that in Leviticus?
I'm sorry?
I said, is that in Leviticus?
Oh, is that in Leviticus? I could say yes, and nobody knows Leviticus.
No, I would have no idea.
So what the hell?
Leviticus 11.
Leviticus actually. 11, exactly.
Well, actually, right. In the Talmud, it says all the good doctors go.
The best doctors go to hell. The second holiest book in Judaism is the Talmud. 2,000 years old, and there is a line there. I'll give it to you in Hebrew to prove to you it's real. Tov shaberofim legehinom. The best doctors go to hell.
And for years, no one knew what it meant.
And then now we know. And now we know. That is exact. By the way, just for the record, raise your hand if you know what is on the Liberty Bell. What sentence is inscribed? Look, I didn't expect any hands to go up except for Charlie's. And I didn't know this till I read it. But you should know this. It tells you so much about the founders. There is one verse on the Liberty Bell, and it's from Leviticus. It shows you how well they knew their Torah, the founders. That they took a Leviticus verse and put it on the Liberty Bell. And you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. Leviticus 25.
It's beautiful. Let's get to some questions, everybody. Let's line up. Because of the quality of Dennis tonight, we might go a little over time. Is that okay, Joe? Maybe a little bit? Is that okay? Good. Great. So I want to get these questions really focused, guys, on religion, faith, Torah, Old Testament. If it's politics, you guys can call into our shows about that.
Right.
Honestly,
right.
You know, that doesn't really interest me tonight. This is such a special opportunity to talk about things that are of eternal consequence. Obviously, you have a question, we'll let you do it. But if it's politics, we're probably just going to kind of just give a short answer and move on. So let's try to get to the meat of the issue, and we'll start right there.
Hi, my name is Melissa, and in 2 Kings, God took up the prophet Elijah in a whirlwind, much like we Christians call the rapture, and we're very much excited and waiting for. Are the Jews awaiting a rapture like us?
So thank you, Melissa, for the question. So I get many questions from Christians on the radio and in forums like this. And I always debate, because I debate how long I should spend on it, because I could talk about this for the rest of the evening. So let me just explain something in general. And this is not a defense, and it's not... Let me even go back further. Forgive me. I have no issue with the theological differences between Judaism and Christianity. And by the way, I'll tell you why. Because I don't measure people by their beliefs, but by their behavior. Now, Christians have a slightly harder time with that because theology is truly central to the Christian mission and outlook and so on. But I have brought, I have no doubt, tens of thousands of people back to church. This Jew has brought tens of thousands of people back to church. And I am thrilled that I have done so. And sometimes Christians, hearing this person on the radio say, Dennis, just want you to know, it was you, a Jew, who brought me back to church. And they then say, then I will get a call, why are you so happy? Don't you want to bring them to synagogue? But the Jewish calling is to bring people to God and the Ten Commandments and the Bible, not to Judaism. If you want to convert to Judaism, you're more than welcome. But it's not our call. Our call is to bring you to Sinai, where we got the Ten Commandments, where the world should get the Ten Commandments. So it doesn't matter to me that there are theological differences. I love what you're doing, irrespective of whether I share every aspect of your theology. Catholics and Protestants don't share the same theology, but are they not united in the battle for God and Bible? Hopefully they are. Okay. So that was my long preface to a short answer. The Messiah plays a much bigger role in Christian faith than in Jewish faith. Christianity got it from Judaism, that they didn't invent it, as Christians are the first to note. But while it is one of the 13 principles of the Jewish faith, according to Maimonides, the greatest Jewish thinker who ever lived, and those 13 principles are generally accepted among Jews who take Judaism seriously, nevertheless, it is not as central. So what will happen? It's like when people ask me, I am adamant that there is an afterlife. Adamant. If there is a good God, there is an afterlife. If there's no afterlife, God is not good. I mean, so I'm at, that's logic. That's not theologic. That's logic. But when people ask me, so Dennis, what happens in the afterlife? I go, the only time I ever think about it is when somebody calls my show and asks me, how do I know what happens in the afterlife? No one has reported. So I don't speculate about it. What happens is less important to me than that it happens. Okay, bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, sorry.
Yes, sir. In October of 2019, there were all the freedom fighters, freedom protesters in Hong Kong, and all the world's leaders said, leave them alone, they have a right to be there. In a month, they were all gone because of COVID. Do you see a correlation there, or is that just happenstance?
So I'll really have a strange answer for you. I don't know that COVID was deliberately unleashed on the world. It was obviously unleashed. Whether it was deliberate or not, I don't have a position. I can only say this. This will really blow all your minds. Judaism does not believe in a devil. It is not a Jewish belief. I know Satan appears in Job, for example, but Satan in Hebrew just means adversary or prosecutor. So I will tell you, and I'm only one person, it's not the most important thing, but I will tell you that the last 3 years started me understanding why people would believe in a metaphysical evil figure who brings evil on the earth. It is hard for me to imagine that so many terrible things happen so quickly and there isn't something diabolical about it. This country was doing really well. I don't care if you hate Donald Trump. I don't care if you love Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not the issue for me. America and the world are the issues. This country was thriving under that president. Period. End of issue. And whether or not there was mischief in the last election, he would have won by a landslide that even cheating could not have undone were it not for COVID. So did the devil bring COVID? Has the diabolical taken over children's hospitals? The biggest advocates of removing healthy girls' breasts because they say they're boys? That's diabolical. Even if you don't believe in God or the devil, it's diabolical. What we are doing to young people in this country, the creme de la creme, Boston Children's Hospital, the most well-known children's hospital in the country affiliated with Harvard Medical School, takes out ads. Come here. We'll take your breasts off. Without the devil, it's explicable. But with the devil, it seems a little more clear.
Thank you.
Hi. Sorry. First of all, I love your show. And I just wanted to ask.
Which one?
Charlie's show.
I want you to know I knew he would say that. I'm a good friend of Charlie.
I just wanted to ask you a question about crypto. What are your thoughts on digital currency, and what is the biblical stance on it?
Yeah, I'll only do this briefly. Thank you for listening and for the support. So when you have a crisis, there's usually an agenda by the leaders to bring something new in. Because of that crisis, the 2008 financial crisis, we got diversity, equity, inclusion. We got wokeism. We also got basically the nationalization of our student loan industry. We got not universal healthcare, but Obamacare. I'm very afraid that with this new bank crisis that we're seeing, which, by the way, Credit Suisse might collapse in the next couple of hours, which is really scary. That's a $1.5 trillion Swiss bank. When the Swiss banks start to collapse, that's not a good sign. My big concern is they're going to now go to an acronym of four letters, and I want to make sure I get this right. It's CBDC. It might be CDBC, which is Centralized Bank Digital Currency. This is effectively a way to erase the dollar and to go to a one-world unilateral currency. One of the reasons why I'm such a proponent, though, of decentralized blockchain technology and why I really support Kristi Noem's veto of the bill in South Dakota is that cryptocurrency and decentralized currency is one of the few ways we can push back against the Klaus Schwab Great Reset elites to try to put in this CBDC currency. I know it's very wonky, everybody, but I encourage you to really be vigilant about a new digital dollar they're trying to bring soon. They're trying to do it. It's wonky. It's abstract. It's in the clouds. And for those of you that care about eschatology and end times, I'm not an expert, but it talks about in great detail about the attempt to try to unify the world through a one world currency. And we should do everything we can to push back against that. So I'm a big fan of crypto for that reason, even though it's rather unstable.
Let me add a biblical proof to what Charlie said. God doesn't want this one world thing. Yes, he wants everybody to worship him and his moral law. That is correct. But everyone with his own nation. When Abraham is blessed, it's very powerful. Through you will be blessed all the nations of the earth. God wants different nations. And the proof is the Tower of Babel. They spoke one language. And God decided, look at what they do when they're unified. I'm going to mix them up and give them a lot of languages. It's a very powerful story. By the way, if you just applauded, you have a moral obligation to read the Rational Bible. That's the name of my commentary. Folks, let me make something clear. I didn't spend the last 8 years, and it will end up 10 years, writing a commentary on the first five books of the Bible to get wealthy. In fact, I regarded nobody writes a commentary on Deuteronomy to make money. Is that fair? Okay. And it gets worse. The next one is Numbers.
No, the real title is In the Wilderness, though.
Yes, it is, but nobody knows that except people who know the Hebrew. But thank you for noting that. I will do that. But nevertheless, Prager's commentary on Numbers sounds like a math book. Hey, I don't know how many it'll sell. But if you really want to understand what this is about, please do read it, The Rational Bible. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Rational numbers. That's well, I like that. And just to add on, Dennis, one more ad. We could do this all night. Genesis 11, the people of Babel, they wanted to make a name upon themselves, not to glorify God. And God said, let us go down and see what man has done. And it's not good for what they're doing in a scattered.
Fame is one of the many, many false gods in life. And I have a great motto that you should take to your heart and your mind. The famous are rarely significant, and the significant are rarely famous.
Next question.
Hi, my name is Beau Justice Shooter, and how do we help Superman love truth, justice, and the American way again?
It's a beautiful question. By the way, they have the most amazing family. They're homeschooling. They're incredible. But Dennis, he's asking, yeah, how do we get Superman back to fighting for truth, justice, and the American way again?
It's a very good question. That question is a beautiful way of explaining the battle that we're in now. How do we get Superman back? That is a perfect way as a metaphor for our condition. When does he resume fighting for the truth, justice, and the American way? That is correct. You know, I think about this. When I was a kid, television, it was not 24/7. They generally ended broadcasting by midnight. Some of you old enough to remember that will remember that. So what happened at midnight? They would show the American. Do you know this? You may not even know this. This is what would happen on your television set if you were up at midnight. They would show the American flag. They would play the national anthem. And then the screen went blank until, I don't know, 6 a.m., 5 a.m., whenever they resumed. So I remember I loved staying up till midnight to seeing the flag and hearing the national anthem. And I didn't realize it. I loved this country. I didn't realize I loved this country till I was in college. And how it happened is not important, but I did. And I wonder how many kids today get the chills when they see the flag and hear the national anthem. And if you don't get chilled by the national anthem of your country is in jeopardy.
Beautiful.
Hi, Dennis. They both just have really quick questions, and we wanted to ask if you say hi to Otto, Snoopy, Megan, and Nathan for us.
Okay, so she is referring to something you should know about. 280 weeks in a row, I have done a fireside chat from my home. It's at PragerU every week, and it will touch you and your children's lives. Otto is my bulldog. He is the most famous dog in America. And I am proud to say it has not gone to his head. He is as humble as when we brought him home as a puppy. But that's what you're referring to, and thank you.
Okay. And so there's 280 of them. They're just as applicable today than when they were recorded. They're easily listened to. I've listened to all 280 podcasts. You can watch them as videos. They're fabulous. And Dennis, every topic you can imagine, from healthcare to private property rights to the border to foreign policy.
A lot of personal topics. How can you be a courageous person?
Yeah, that's right.
It's geared to young people.
And it's unbelievably educational. It's called Fireside Chats with Dennis Prager. Next question.
My name is Rebecca Jensen. I homeschool with Classical Conversations. And Mr. Prager, I was wondering, what's your favorite Bible verse and why?
What is my favorite what?
Bible verse?
Yes. And she's homeschooled through?
Classical Conversations.
By the way, if you meet, as I do, so many homeschooled young people, the difference is so powerful between the average homeschooled kid. I'll tell you immediately, they're more mature. They're certainly polite. They know much more about any subject. And here's the key to me. They're not jaded. You get jaded in American schools. You lose your innocence and you get cynical. Okay, my favorite Bible verse, is that what you asked?
And why?
And why? Okay, this won't make your day. I always say what I believe. I do have a favorite Bible verse. And it is, those of you, I'll keep the suspense. I'll say it in Hebrew. Ohave Adonai Sin'ura.
Psalm 97:10.
Those of you who love God must hate evil. Yeah, right, exactly. If you don't hate evil, you don't love God. That's why when Berkeley announced this, I don't know if this is new to you because you really know me well and I'm honored, really honored by that. But Berkeley City Council announced about 25 years ago that Berkeley was a hate-free zone. So I announced on my radio show, I can't visit Berkeley anymore. I hate evil. I can't get in. It's a stupid comment, hate-free zone. Because if you don't hate evil, you will hate non-evil. Great Talmudic phrase, those who are kind to the cruel will be cruel to the kind. That exemplifies the left. Anyway, thank you for asking. It's a delight to meet you.
My favorite verse for tonight is Genesis 1:26 and 1:27, that man is made in the image of God. It answers every political question. If man is a mistake, then Marxism could possibly be entertained. But if man is an image bearer of the Creator, then Marxism is evil.
Well said, well said. Okay, so here we go. Yes.
Hi, my name is Ezra. I am 7 years old.
I'm reading Charlotte's Web and Little
Nelson Paley.
Do you have any book recommendations?
Do you have any book recommendations?
She asked, how much is each volume of the Rational Bible? And
this is Ezra. She's 7 years old. We're reading all the classic literature right now. So we did Charlotte's Web, we did Stuart Little, and Little House on the Prairie. She just wanted to know if you had any book recommendations for her.
If I have a what? Oh, a book recommendation for a seven-year-old? In the classical tradition, obviously outside of the Bible? Well, this is not in the classical tradition, so it may or may not be helpful to you, but PragerU, it's all free, has a huge number of books for little kids. Otto's Tales is an example. You're familiar with it already? So I'm bringing Coles to Newcastle. Do you have an answer to what's
your
question?
I don't know if your kids are old enough, but I'm still a big believer in Mark Twain. I think the fact that we got rid of Mark Twain in our school system has been one of the big mistakes. But I don't think your kids are old enough yet. But I would consider that to be in the tradition of especially American literature of kind of adolescent development and boys becoming men. So thank you. Next question.
Bless your family. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jenna. I'm the state youth advisor for the Arizona Teenage Republicans. I've been an activist for probably 3 years now. Thank you. Thank you. So I've been involved in activism for quite a while already, but I actually see a lot of new faces in this room when it comes to a lot of kids, teenagers, young adults. There's quite a few here that I've never really seen before. So my question is for if they were to ever get involved, and from your experience, how do biblical principles and teachings motivate you to continue to be involved even when the days get hard?
Even when the days get hard. Thank you for asking that because this is a very important question to me. So I'm finishing my commentary on the fourth book, Numbers. And in it, in the book of Numbers, is the story of the Israelite spies sent into Canaan. 10 of the 12, each representing one of the tribes, came back and said, "We can't do it. They're too strong. They'll kill us." And two, Caleb and Joshua, said, "No, no, no. We can conquer it, and God promised that we will." So I read commentary after commentary, because I have no issue that I don't believe I'm the only one with great insights. Hopefully I have great insights. So one commentator wrote about why God was so angry at the 10 spies who gave the negative report. And when I read it, I decided to publicize this over and over on my radio show and in speeches. Despair is a sin. That was his whole sentence. God says despair is a sin. That is entirely accurate. And even if you don't believe in God, let me ask you something. Could Churchill not have despaired? Could Washington not have despaired? Is there any good battle which was always being won? At no time was there reason for despair? Despair is narcissistic. Sorry. Means you feel sorry for you. Don't do it. You can't despair. And by the way, there's no reason to despair. There's a reason to be worried. We're losing. Okay? I know we're losing. But I don't despair. I wake up every day and fight. And that is what you have to do. And that is what we all have to do.
We're going to get to two more.
That's my biblical basis.
Amen.
Hi, Dennis. Hi, Charlie. I just wanted to ask you a question about Revelation and who you think the two witnesses are. I have my own theory about Enoch and Elijah, but I just wanted to know your thoughts about that.
Dennis?
You take it. Revelation is in the New Testament. I'll let you handle it.
Liz, I haven't gotten that far yet. So.
Okay, fair enough. We don't know.
Yeah. What is your theory?
By the way, are you homeschooled?
No.
No, he goes to Dream City Christian at Turning Point Academy.
Uh-huh. Very nice. Anyway, I'm sorry we disappointed you. But
what's your theory?
My theory is Enoch and Elijah, because there was no recorded verse of them dying in the Bible.
Fascinating.
That sounds very rational. Thank you.
By the way, talking about biblical figures dying... So there, it is very widely believed that the Torah is silent about an afterlife. Most Jews don't believe in an afterlife, but that's irrelevant. Most Jews don't keep the Sabbath. Doesn't mean that Judaism doesn't want you to keep the Sabbath. So that's why when people should never ask me, what do Jews believe? It's irrelevant. They should ask, what does Judaism believe? So, and by the way, same with Christians, by the way. Is the same thing would be applicable. So whenever people die, not any, but Abraham, Isaac, Moses, Jacob, and they die, and it says, and they were gathered unto their kin or their people. And what could that possibly mean? They weren't buried with any relatives. They were buried in a separate place. What does it mean they were gathered to their kin? It is an extremely strong argument that it means that they were with their kin in the afterlife. It is a very, by the way, there's another powerful argument. Egypt believed deeply in an afterlife. That's what the pyramids were, tombs. And it was to escort the Pharaoh to the next life. The Torah rejects every single thing the Egyptians believe. Why didn't it reject the afterlife? The most basic belief of Egypt, the Torah did not reject. Because there is an afterlife.
Yes, there is. Last question.
Hi, Dennis and Charlie. Thank you for this event. My name's Hannah Toth. I'm on the town council over in Fountain Hills. And being involved in the local level, I realized that there's a big push to get Republicans or independents or people that are still having these American morals involved. However, with events like this and even at the local level, we're not making much progress in flipping people. So I guess my question is, how do we spread the message of American morality, of Christianity? How do we stop preaching to the choir?
Oh, it's a great final question. And Charlie, I'm sure you have some thoughts too. So first of all, I have addressed this issue of, well, you're preaching to the choir all of my life. And I have a very good answer, if I may say, to that. It is as important to preach to the choir as to those who are not in the choir. The reason for our troubled state in America is because the choir forgot the melody. That is the single biggest reason. The vast majority of believing Christians and believing Jews didn't have a clue as to how to make the case for God in the Bible. And why is there so much disaffection? How many religious families still have religious children or religious grandchildren? Not all, by any means, maybe half. We have the lowest church-going rate in American history today. Clearly, the believers didn't preach to the choir effectively. And it's true in secular life. Americans didn't know how to preach America to Americans. And you know who it began with? The generation called the greatest generation. I began speaking at the age of 21. I have been in public life every day of my adult life. And I remember in my 20s speaking to adults and looking at them. This was all the World War II generation. And I said to them in my 20s, I wish I had recordings of it, folks, or ladies and gentlemen, when you were still allowed to say ladies and gentlemen, so ladies and gentlemen, you have devoted your lives to giving my generation everything you didn't have. There's a big problem. You didn't give us everything you did have. So I knew this as a kid. They didn't give us what it means to be an American. They gave us as trouble-free a childhood, which is understandable. I'm not blaming them. But it's their fault, but I'm not blaming them. After the Depression and World War II, you were interested in your kids having a really easy childhood. And they did it. They gave us a really easy childhood, and it produced the baby boomer generation, which produced the current generations. So number one, you must teach the choir the melody. If they don't have it, there's no chance. So I'm totally for preaching to the choir because it doesn't know how to sing. Number two, we do have to touch everybody else. That is why they don't want him at UC Davis. That is why they try to shut down PragerU on YouTube. Deep down, every leftist knows if they hear us, they're doomed. They really, really, really believe that. That's why they have to smear us as much as possible, as misinformation. Misinformation, I learned Russian in order to read Pravda. I am an expert in left-wing lies. That's all I studied. There were seven kids out of thousands at Columbia who majored in communist affairs. I was one of the seven. And I read Russian in order to read Pravda. That's all they would do. Whenever they differed with something the West said, misinformation. Putin says that to this day. It's all disinformation, misinformation. This is their way of suppressing dissent. Final thing that you should remember and tell your kids if they don't share your values. On the Fireside Chat, half of it is me talking. The other half is me taking questions from viewers and listeners, usually young people all over the world. Young person sends in a question. Dennis, how am I supposed to know who's telling the truth and who's lying? It's a very good question. How are you supposed to know? Well, thank God, I think best under pressure, and I actually came up with an answer at the Fireside Chat, which I had never thought to give before, and is really something you should share. This is how you know who's lying and who's telling the truth. The liars censor. That's how you know.
Thank you. I encourage all of you to do a couple of things. Check out Dennis's book, The Rational Bible, and We Need to Fight. And I'll answer that question and the more broad question. The people that agree with our worldview have been quiet for too long. And they win if we silence ourselves. They will lose if we speak up with truth. I truly believe it's that simple. Dennis, you are a national treasure, and you've impacted millions of people. Praise God. We thank God for you, Dennis. Praise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
thank you, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.